Blog Talk Radio.
Peace and blessings, and welcome to the Leopard Carpet with Lady Flava. My special guest tonight is actually a dear, dear friend of mine, John D. Green Sr., who is a singer, songwriter, composer, musician, and actor. I know he's got a lot that he wants to share with us. He's been very, very busy and being featured on a variety of shows and showcases online and out there in the Michigan area. So welcome to the show, John.
Hey, Flava, how are you?
I'm very good. How are you?
I'm good.
You're good?
Oh, yeah.
I don't think that you used your, like, your famous line that you normally use.
Yeah. I'm just figuring out walking in all different. I've gotten comfortable, so now just walking it in a little different.
It's funny, John. I was talking to Jace, you know, from Black Stacks, and I said, you know, John's on the show today. Because he's like, is it today or is it tomorrow? I said, it's today. I said, you know, John, I think, likes coming on the show with me. What am I going to talk about with him? He's like, Flav, John just likes to be on the air talking with you. So I'm like, yes, he does. Yes,
he does.
It's
true. He got me. It's true.
Right. So John, you know, it's like, okay, where do I even start with you? Because, you know, you have been on the leopard carpet with me a few times. You've been featured as a guest on the All Media Artist shows when I used to do those particular shows. So I honestly, if you do not know John D. Green Sr., I would really, really highly recommend that you go back and listen to the archives of some of those shows, because I'm going to kind of bypass some of the things that we covered on that. Yeah, we will cover some of it for those of you that are new to, you know, getting to know this amazing man, this creative soul. But, you know, he started out young with, you know, coming into, you know, his creativity and playing piano and having a mother who blessed him, you know, with that. So, John, you know what? I was really, really thinking about, you know, what direction to go with you, you know, on this. And I was, you know me, and I'm always about winging it. Nothing's ever planned when it comes to Lady Flavor on Flavor News Radio. But, you know, why don't you describe for me and for the listeners of this show, what did it look like in the very beginnings of your creativity, you know, coming to light to then who you are today?
Oh, wow. That's a really great question. Remember I said I was ready? I was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm ready. So here we go. Look here. It was chaotic. Believe it or not, it was very chaotic to have thoughts and feelings and emotions and no way to express them, and then to discover that you could express yourself through music. But having ideas in your mind and not being able to manifest those ideas into sound, which was your only form of emotional outlet at the time. So it was very chaotic, believe it or not. It was kind of stressful. I guess I made it good, but it was a crazy time. You hear things, to be moved by the sounds that you heard in your life is a very strange experience, I think, only because I experienced that and it was strange. I was moved by the sounds of my world, so to speak. And
So when you say that, John, is are we going back to when you were a child and you were learning piano, or at what point are you feeling this and experiencing this
till
in
now,
your life?
From the
okay.
very beginning till now, to be honest with you, it's a strange process to be moved emotionally by something that you hear yet can't describe.
Mm.
And even stranger still to want to take what you heard that put you in one mood and to think instantly, oh, I bet if I did this, it would change the mood of what I just heard, thus changing my mood.
Okay.
Especially when you're a child. So
it's,
you know, that part was, it was cool. It was different, definitely different.
So then, how would you describe who you are today?
Chaotic and confused. No. I personally, I'm pretty grounded. I'm pretty steadfast and comfortable with who I am. And the who I am is simply me. And, you know, it seems like it's constantly trying to be complicated by other people, because who I am is pretty simple. I am
right.
Just simply me, you know. But to a lot of people in my world, that in itself is complex and confusing, that this guy is set on just being him. He's pretty convinced that, you know, it's cool to be just him, where, you know, I find it strange that other people are so determined to be like or to act like or be similar to, I'm just okay with me, you know. I dig being me. So
is this something that you grew into, or is this something that you've, in a sense, always felt?
Oh, no. It's still a process. I'm still growing and learning more about myself. I definitely have to grow into being comfortable with me. It's, you know, to be different, to be considered different, especially at a young age, you know, with the whole peer pressures and this and that, that is definitely something that it takes. You know, you build up a confidence, or you fail by the way. You have to learn to be comfortable with you, which means being comfortable with the good you and the bad you, you know, with all parts of you. And it's something you grow into. It's just like your sound, you know. There are people that have a certain sound, and that sound is uniquely them. Other people mm-hmm. grow into their sound, into what is uniquely them. I think I was one of the people that kind of grew into a sound that I was comfortable enough with to say, this is me, and this is what it is, and this is it. So, yeah, you know.
So do you think that, you know, the sound that is known as John D. Green, Senior's Flavor today, will evolve into something different in the future?
That's the beauty of my sound. It's ever-changing.
Hey, okay.
Settle down. It's ever-changing, which is really, really exciting. I really like that part, actually.
So as an artist, at what point in your creativity were you the most comfortable?
Right this second, because I'm not
right
in the studio for a change. Right
okay.
this second, pretty comfortable.
Okay.
You know.
Okay.
It changes. It changes every minute of every day. You know, your comfort
right.
level. You can think you pretty much got your finger on the pulse of something. It takes one note or one sound to change the entire way you look or listen or think about something. So never totally comfortable, which is a good thing, because, you know, you're looking. You're constantly looking and striving to improve. But at the same time, I'm comfortable enough to do my thing at a moment's notice. But, again, you know, it's not necessarily comfortable as it is confident. Pretty confident in what I do most of the time.
So now the most important question that I'm going to ask you this evening, can you guess what it is?
No, I have no idea.
Oh, my goodness. John, what color describes you? No.
Oh, here we go. Funny stuff. Funny stuff. That was an awesome question. That is an awesome question. Yeah.
What's the answer, John?
It's always turquoise. It never changes.
Oh, John, you blew it again.
Hey, I know what you want to hear. I know what you want to hear. And my next step will be getting pom-poms and getting them, you know, painted up to be the golden black and the whole leopard deal. I know. I mean, someone said leopard. Yeah. But that can be the color of my shaded mood is leopard. How's that?
One of these days, John, I'm going to get you to just automatically say that.
Yeah.
I'm
going
to practice.
Will.
We have many years ahead of us. I'm going to practice with you. And one day it is just going to flow right out of your mouth.
And I'll say it at a big venue. I'll say it at somewhere huge. And then you'll be like, what did he just say? Did I hear him right? That's not how to play.
Anyway. Okay, let's get serious now, huh? Right. I just had to put that in there. Let's talk about the most rewarding thing that you have experienced as far as music, whether it be, you know, singing, songwriting, you know, playing the piano and creating all the amazing sounds that you know how to put together, you know, to composing and all of that. So what is, like, the highlight that stands out in your mind as far as music?
Wow, it's funny that you would mention that, because the highlight that stands out to me, it'll ever be top. It's like the biggest event in my musical life and my career thus far, and that's an easy one. That's probably recording with my son and watching my son arrange and compose. That was probably the biggest moment I'll have, you know, as a musician and a writer and a composer, and, you know, and of course as a father. It would be composing with my son. That pretty much was, that was the top of the mountain for me, because it was an amazing process, and to see him at a young age have to go the full distance, you know, and not need me to arrange for him or to place or to syncopate anything, to for him to be able to know it, feel it, hear it, you know, see the shifts in the tracks and the chords, and to understand it enough to write to it. That in itself was amazing. So yeah, that would definitely be the highlight of my musical endeavor thus far, and probably beyond. Yeah.
So then let's go in the other direction, and what would you consider has been the most difficult experience being a part of the music industry and being a musical soulful talent?
Probably the most difficult for me, because I'm a pretty simple guy, would be the whole you don't look like you sound, or, you know, you don't sound black enough, or you don't just, you know, different things like that, because music is music, and, you know, you write so many different kinds of music, so that could be a problem. You would think, you hear all the time, variety is the spice of life, but when it comes to music, that doesn't seem necessarily true. You know, people get locked into the whole, I have to be a genre, I have to be this or that in order to get, and I guess I don't fit that mold. So for me, that would probably be the most difficult part, would be some of the things that I've had to endure as far as like being a little different or sounding a little different or writing too much music or so many different kinds, or, you know, what is your genre, so to speak. So yeah, that would be it. That's the most frustrating, the most difficult.
I can appreciate that, definitely. You know, I just want you to know, you know, one of your biggest fans is in the chat room. You know, Miss Ruby is here with us, you know, and she's waving. I don't know what color. Ruby, what's your color? Because, you know, I really want to share some leopard pom-poms with you, Mama, you know, but maybe we need to get your own color pom-poms. But, you know, she's one of your biggest fans.
Yeah, she's my very best. She's an awesome human being, a great fan, and a wonderful friend. Ruby is it. I told everybody before, Ruby's the cat's meow. So.
Meow. Anyway, I'm going to jump in and play this beautiful, beautiful piece that was created and composed by you and LJ called Rain.
Ooh, awesome.
We were just listening to Rain by my featured guest tonight on the Leopard Carpet, John D. Green Sr., and that particular piece was also created with his 8-year-old son, John D. Green Jr. So, you know, when you sent me that particular piece, John, you know, of course, as we all know in our little circle, you know, I'm the emotional one. You know, that made me cry. It made me cry because not only is it beautiful, just the whole understanding of the creation of it, and with LJ being a part of this, you know, and so instrumental in its creativity and beauty. And, you know, I was so honored to be able to debut it on my show.
That was blessings, definitely, that you did. He had to work hard on that one, and it wasn't a, you know, one day or one week process. He had to do a lot of writing and rewriting and timing and setting his pace, because that one was him. You know, that one I said, hey, buddy, I write my parts and you write your parts. We'll get in the studio with two musicians and we'll lay that one down. But, you know, your arrangements, they have to be yours, so they have to be crisp and clean. If I can help you in any way as far as musician to musician go, you know, I'll do that. But as far as the writing and the arrangement of it and the setting and placement, that has to be you. Because, you know, this one is yours as well as mine. This will be something you co-wrote. So get the co-writing, because that's the plan. You know, and he made it happen. You know, it's funny. He's 8 and he's in the studio, and I'm on him. We're in it. This is business. So he was there. My little man. He was right there making it happen. It was very, very cool.
So I do want to come back and talk to you about, you know, being LJ's dad, but I do want to ask you something, John, while we're talking about, you know, your music career and, you know, being a musician, being a composer and all of that. If you could paint the perfect picture of what your world, you would ideally want your world to look like when it comes to the music industry, what would it look like?
Wow. What would my world look like? That's a really good question as well. I don't know. It would probably look like a scene from a 60s hippie concert, kind of, you know, where everybody is just a lot of love, and you see all these different people wearing what they want, kind of dressing how they want and doing what they want, but within reason, you know. Nobody's really trying to hurt anybody or do anybody wrong. It's just, you know, live, love and listen to music, kind of. So that would probably be the picture it would paint, you know. And there would be a lot more collaborating going on. So my painting would probably look like a really good Doobie Brothers concert.
With leopard print in the background, right?
Yeah, absolutely, all over the stage, you know.
All right, so so you see yourself, like, performing on stage in front of masses.
Yeah, definitely that, but more of an interactive kind of, wow. Have you ever seen a Stomp show or heard any of the reviews of the Stomp shows?
Mm-hmm.
It would be very similar to that, very
okay.
Interactive. You know, I want my audience to come away feeling like they just performed and they had a great time. You know, I like to involve them. And it came all that way, you know, and it's cool if you want to sit and listen to music. That's awesome. But if you wanted to interact and be a part of it, I definitely like to keep that option open, and that's always been a dream of mine, to have an interactive concert, something just over the top, completely interactive.
So when you say an interactive, since you are a pianist,
mm-hmm.
what would that look like? Would you be stepping away from the keyboards, and do you dance, John?
I can bust a move. But
you got some moves?
I think I have some moves. Let me say this. I think I have some moves. So that's not to say I'm, you know, a dancer, but I think I got a couple moves. I mean, I don't know if I would ever do them in public anymore now that I'm older and aware of how goofy they look. But, hey, you know, you never know. I've been known to cut a rug or two.
So what would it look like in you getting the crowd going?
It would be crazy. I'll tell you what I would do. I mean, let's just say if the situation was perfect and the finances weren't an issue or nothing, all the seats and everything would be mic'd. Just the entire amphitheater would be mic'd. Each seat would be mic'd. And at different times for different songs, these mics would come up. And the people could sing certain parts. There's certain parts of songs like Mom. There's parts where people always sing them when I perform these certain songs. I would have the whole theater mic where people could just sing their parts for that song or those songs, and then have all of that being recorded onto disc. Mass burnings.
Hot.
Oh, yeah, mass burnings while the show's going on. And as they leave the theater, they'd all get these CDs. And when they got home, they would be able to hear what they heard at the show with all their voices, you know, a couple thousand people's voices singing these certain parts, these chorus parts of these different tracks that they love. That, to me, would be part of what it would look like.
You know, with technology, the way that it is advancing so quickly, you just never know. I mean, you might be able to mass produce on the spot just like that, where people could walk away, you know, with a piece of what they experienced to always have with them to remember.
That would be something. That is definitely part of the dream. I mean, it's just, you know, it's exciting. You've been to concerts and you get to the part of the song that you know and you're singing and you look to the left and right of you and they're singing and everyone's singing and they're right in the mood. You know, that's a part of it. Or you see the artist hold the microphone down into the audience and the people are singing that certain part. And he sings this part and holds it back down. And that's just greatness. I love it. I love it. That to me is being a part of it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of what I always wanted.
Well, you know, we do have a caller who has raised their hand, John, so let me bring them in.
Cool.
All right, caller from the 252 area code, you are on the Leopard Carpet with John D. Green Sr.
Hello, Lady Flavor.
Hello.
Hello, John.
Hello.
Hi, this is Eleanor.
Oh, Eleanor, see, I missed you so much, I just lost.
She forgot
I lost memory
my name.
Of the area code.
She forgot.
I forgot. I was missing you the other day. That's why I had to send you a message. I mean, I knew that you had said you would be away.
Uh-huh.
But I guess you were away long enough that I forgot your area code.
Oh, my. I wasn't gone that long.
I know, huh? Well, you know, I'm old. I'm old.
Well, I'm old, too.
So what do you think of our friend John D. Green Sr.?
Oh, I love the music. I love the music. And you know what? I like the ideas that he has. I think that is so thoughtful. It lets me know what he feels about people. You
mm-hmm.
know? And for him to want to do, to even have the desire to do something so the people would be happy. It says a lot about him, you know, what he's feeling on the inside.
Well, you know, and that's funny that you picked up on that, Eleanor, and I have to agree with you that that does say something for John's character, that it's not all about him being on stage and just doing, you know, this concert or this interactive thing, but it's all about the whole experience.
Right,
and that everybody, it's not, you know, and I agree with you. I agree with you. That's a beautiful thing. So,
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No. Go ahead. No, you're fine.
And the music that he was playing is just something about it. And then when he started talking, you could just visualize. And when he was saying about he would like to have people singing along with him and everything. And I was thinking about when you ask him if he could dance, and I'm like, oh, that would be crazy.
Mm-hmm. You're sharing the vision.
Like, it would be crazy.
Right now.
Yes. And it would be, what would be entertaining. It's like what he was thinking about, and all of a sudden, in the middle of the song or wherever he wanted to put them, okay, the first time, what they might see when the lights dim is somebody, okay, the ballerina comes out, and then she disappears, and all of a sudden, here comes somewhat of, I would say, maybe a hip-hop dancer or something, and do a little spin and do a fraction, that would fade away. And then, you know, it looked like I could just see ribbons and colors. And that music, right? Well, you know me, a music lady flavor. I love music.
Right.
That's all part of the dream. I have a track that I'm working on where during the live show, in the middle of the track, the music just stops. And the lights dim out. When the lights come on, I have 5 selected horn players.
Wow.
But they're all standing around like old street corner doo-wop singers.
Okay.
And the part that's playing on each horn is kind of like that, but they're doing it with these horns, with this brass section.
Five
guys that I have chosen, they're very cool cats. And but it looks like old street corner doo-wop around the can, except for they're not standing in anything. We don't want anything to get in the way of the vibrato of the brass section. But it looks cool. We're just kind of leaning about, and it only lasts for 2 minutes, and it's done.
Mm-hmm.
And it's gone. They fade to black again.
That sounds nice.
It'll be nice when it's done. But I can't wait to see it, because I know I see what it looks like when I put the idea together. And now bringing that idea to light, I think it's going to be a beautiful thing. It'll catch everyone off guard. And the piece that they play is just phenomenal. And to hear it played with real brass, it's amazing. Over the top.
Wow. All these musicians, Lady Flavor, do you sometimes wonder, oh, my goodness, you're to absorb all of this. You do this all the time.
You know, Eleanor, John and Stephen, you know, and Kevin and all, and Delon, you know, they know I'm the emotional one, you know, and I cry, you know, frequently. I'm a Cancer, okay, let's just put it out there. I'm a leopard Cancer over here, so, you know, I'm emotional. But the thing is, what creates the emotions is the fact that I feel so extremely blessed with who God has put in my path. And to have artists, but not only artists like John D. Green Sr. to come into my life, and this creative soul who you can feel his passion, and just hearing his words and hearing and feeling his music, that John's a great man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a great man. He's a great husband. He's a great dad. He's a great humanitarian. And so there's so much more to him than just the artistry. That I think that it also helps a person understand, when they understand who the man is, you can appreciate the art more.
That's right. And that's why, because he is who he is. You know, that helps to bring the music out. Like you say, there's a few musicians that, you know, you see that in, but they have their own ideas. But each one is, you know, just so good at what they do.
Right. You know. But I think that you know, it's been a pleasure for me to be on this journey with John. You know, in this past year of knowing him, and that, you know, I've talked about this with John, I've talked about it with Stephen, and my visual of this is that one day I will be able to have the opportunity to put on what I'm calling it in my head right now, Flava Fest, you know, where I can bring, you know, artists, or gather artists up here in Seattle, you know,
that's
in
nice.
A sense, you know, for a more relaxed meet and greet night at a venue to where after the meet and greet and having, you know, a bite to eat together, we open up the doors to the public where the artists gather as family and jam.
Oh.
You know, just like impromptu jam, whether it be get on the piano, whether it be getting on the mic to sing, whether it's picking up guitars and horns and drums and whatever it might look like. Maybe some spoken word is in there. Maybe there's some dancers in there. Maybe we've got visual art flashing on a screen and we've got paintings hanging on the wall to then the following night going into a more formal event where the artist actually plays their sound, their flavor.
Oh.
So this is a dream, you know.
Oh.
It's something that I'm working on right now and exploring who and how I might be able to pull this together. But I can see it. I can feel it. And, of course, the artists that, you know, again, God has connected me with, such as John, it's easy to create. It is easy to see it and feel it.
Oh, that sounds great.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting in itself.
Yeah. Oh, and I love that piano. I love piano anyway, but I love that. How do you make those keys just... They just say attention, attention.
It's a whole different school of music. There are people that play the piano, and those people are usually the really good ones. And then there are people like me that, you know, I can play okay, but what I try to do is I try to make the piano say what I'm trying to tell you. I'm trying to convey a message to you. With every piece, I'm trying to convey a message. And I'm using the piano as my voice to convey a message to you. More so, I'm trying to provoke a feeling. Each piece is here to provoke an emotion from you. So I use these in the chord progressions in the way that they're structured to provoke this emotion. And since it's an effect that different chords and different keys provoke certain emotions, I kind of capitalize on that when I'm making pieces, depending on what the piece is supposed to provoke, what emotion it's supposed to provoke, you know.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll tell you right now, it really sounds great. It really sounds great. And I'm not going to take up too much of the time, lady, because I know there's probably others that want to come in. But I'll be listening for a few minutes. And,
all right.
I just wanted you to know. Yeah, I just want you to know that I did stop by.
Okay, I thank you so very much. And I want you to know that you have been greatly missed, Eleanor, and I'm going to memorize the area code again because I'm hoping that I'm going to see you on other shows pop up because I so love you and I love your support and, you know, I'm excited about being on the SJF music team with you, Eleanor and John.
Yeah, I'm excited about all of you all being there. Yay, I'm not alone.
All right,
okay.
Mama, I'm going to put you back on hold. Thank you so much again, Eleanor.
Okay, love you too.
All right.
Okay.
All righty.
See, that was awesome.
Well, you know, that was awesome, John. You know, and I have to agree with Eleanor. You know, you have a way of creating, you know, with your voice, with your words, you know, a sense of us being able to grasp and understand your passion for what it is that you do. But you created such a visual, you know, about what that might look like that I totally am with Eleanor. You could see it. You could feel it. You can really, you know, believe that it can and will happen. So I love that. I love that. I'm glad I asked you that question because that was great.
I'm doing good, huh? Yeah, you're doing amazingly well. Yeah, keep up the great work. It would be different. I think my music and everything would be a lot different if I had went to a more formal school for training. Or say if I had pipes like, let's just say someone random, Monica Monet. Let's say if I had real serious pipes like that young lady with the amazing voice or my main guy, The Voice, you know, DeLon. I think my music would be really different. I believe that. You know, people say, oh, no, you still be good. Well, but then that would be my, I will rely on my voice and my, you know, classical training or my, you know, that would be my, what I would lean to and rely on. But mm-hmm. because I don't have that golden tone and I don't have the classical training, you know, until when I got older, I rely more on the emotional aspect of the sound as opposed to the factual matter being, you know, chord structures and progressional chords and the voice, you know, making sure the voice is golden and very pure. If I possessed a better voice, I think my music would be different. And if I possessed all these different classical trainings early on, I also think my voice would be different. Or no, my music would be a lot different. So
mm-hmm.
I think it definitely changes things, and for the better, I believe, at times. You know, and of course there are other times when I wish, you know, wow, you know, I wish my voice was better. You know, I wish I could play better. I wish, yeah, but hey, you know, I'm getting there.
I understand.
I'm getting there.
Right. So, you know, there's so many things that we can cover in this particular show, and, you know, you've got, you know, your Sabuta projects going on. You've got, you know, your acting projects going on. But before we get to that, John, I want to talk about, like, it is really interesting in a sense how your son seems to be mirroring you from the music to the acting. So what is it like to be LJ's dad?
Well, because of him, I got some pretty big shoes to fill. I want to be just like him. Yeah, he's let's see, it's something. And I say that because you hear about children at a young age and they develop their personalities. And then that's how you know who they are and how they'll be. Well, my mm-hmm. son, his personality is very strong. He's a very strong personality. He's very aware of himself, you know, of how he feels at any given time, you know. And watching him grow, it's an exercise in patience and discipline for me because, you know, in order to respect someone, you try to understand who they are first and how they are to where you can deal with them on a regular basis. And my son is different than a lot of children his age. He's very opinionated. He's has a very strong vocabulary and a really good understanding and comprehension of what words mean and the uses of the words. So when he speaks, his conversation is very much like our conversation. And, you know, when you're just having a conversation or at times a negotiation with someone, that's acceptable. But when it's your son, you go into parent mode. And there mm-hmm. are times when parent mode doesn't apply because this is a serious conversation where he has very serious points and very serious concerns, and they need to be addressed because you can't tell him why it's sky blue, Dad. Well, because God likes blue, son. Well, you know, he's one of those kids, and he's like, well, science, I learned this. Also, you know, it's God like science. So it's kind of one of those situations that you have to approach it very carefully. So I approach all things with him going into it knowing that my son isn't, you know, he's an intelligent and informed boy. He's still a boy. He's my boy. But at the same time, I have to respect who he is and how he is. So it that kind of changes the dynamics of parenting as opposed to when I was young, you know, you do what I say, you eat what I put in front of you, you know, that whole breakdown. It changes, but at the same time, it makes it easier because I know there are things that he'll understand, and it makes it easier to talk to him. So
but when
I
it comes to his creativity, oh, I don't mean
oh.
to, I'm sorry, John, I didn't mean
no,
to cut
okay.
you off.
Go ahead.
So when it comes to his creativity, when it comes to music, was that something he just naturally was like wanting to come into the studio and hang out with Dad, or is it something that you kind of encouraged? How did that come about?
I would love to be able to sit here and tell you that that was all me. I did that from the time he was, but I can't. I really, really want to, but I can't. He had his own ideas of music. So I have video of him when he was 2 in my lap playing the keyboard, just doing his thing. He had his idea of what his thing should sound like, and, you know, he would get crazy with it, and then he'd get real calm and kind of hum along, and then crazy and then calm. And I used to ask my wife, do you think all kids do this? And she, well, sure, you know, if they're around instruments and this and that. But then it continued. And then she thought, well, maybe it's a little different. You know, maybe there's something a little different about the way he does things. He would hear things and change them. He'd hear things and change things and hear things and change things. You know, around 3 or 4, I said, John Derek, why'd you do that? Why'd you change that sound? It wasn't right. It wasn't right. How do you know? My ear says. So his creativity, I think it's been in him since the beginning. He'd come in the studio and sit perfectly quiet for hours, just watching, not talking. He's quiet when it's time to be quiet, and he'd talk when he had, when there was time for us to discuss what's going on. He'd put his input in there at 4, 5, or 6. He had stuff to say, what he heard, what he didn't hear. So I always knew that there was something to it, but I wanted him to develop it, and I didn't want to force him. Be one of the parents, you will get in here. I used to make him study, and I used to make him practice, but he wanted to be in there anyway. So I would get him in the studio. I remember when I told him, okay, the studio is no longer mine. The studio is yours now. I showed him how everything worked, everything, how to turn everything on and off, and I said, you can come into the studio whenever you want. You can bring whoever you want to bring in the studio. But the studio is your responsibility. Anything that gets damaged, it's your responsibility. From that day till now, he is a true musician in the ways in which we are about our equipment. Everything is serious. Nothing is a toy. Nothing is a joke. Nothing is a game. Every bit of equipment is necessary to what we do. So he adapted that policy and that belief and that principle very early on, and he stuck to it. So I knew then that this would be something that would be a part of his life. How significant it will be in the future, I don't know. But it seems like he's going to go a long way with this, you know, and I can't wait to see the journey he takes musically. I'm very excited for him.
I'm excited, too, you know, because, you know, as I watch you grow and just all of these other opportunities are coming your way in such a short amount of time, and then all of a sudden LJ's right in there, too, and I'm like, wow, this is just like, I don't know how Donna just really keeps it all straight and keeps up with it. So why don't we just, like, briefly talk about Donna, you know, and you know, how instrumental she is in what you and LJ are doing.
Wow, Donna. Let's see. I love her. I wouldn't want to be her. I definitely admire her strength and her endurance, because there's a lot to it that goes on behind the scenes that people don't see, that she is a direct part of. She is the cause of a lot of it. She puts in the work. I mean, I think it's hard enough to be an agent or to manage people, but I think it's even harder when you have a personal stake in it, a wife, you know, a girlfriend, or whatever the case should be. In this case, it's my loving wife. So there's a lot more to it, and a lot of the times that me personally, I'll say me, I have no problems. I mean, a lot of the things that I would take for granted, I have to catch myself at times and just, hey, you know, I called you. I just wanted to thank you for, you know, this or that. Because, you know, it's easy to take that stuff over. You're my agent, so go agent this. Mm-hmm. Or agent, you know, this is your job, this and that. But there has to be a degree of support and admiration to back someone, unless it's all financial.
Sure.
When people do things for money all the time. But there are other people, real people, that do things for the love of what they're doing. You know all about that.
Mm-hmm.
But she does, you know, she goes above and beyond. And it's not easy. I mean, I watch her work. when it comes to networking or contacting these producers or, you know, talking with directors back and forth in the emails 3 or 4 in the morning, or, you know, last minute wardrobe changes or sound checks or rider sheets for shows, or, and she handles all that, and she does it with ease, it, you know, or it seems graceful.
Right.
But, you know, I also get to hear the hard times, you know, like September is going to be an absolutely crazy, crazy month for us. And, you know, I'm worried because there's so much to do that has to be done that we've obligated ourselves to do. And at the same time, I think about she's behind the scenes on every event that will take place, and that's just September. That's not going
okay.
further because, you know, this goes all the way through November. But
okay.
she's going to have to be behind the scenes making it all happen. Everyone goes to her for okay, when is this happening? You know, did this change? You know, how many inches is this? How about this? Where is that? You know, can we find this? Can he do this? Can you search his resume, you know, document for that? How about this? Okay, the little man, can you do this? What about? She has to be at the moment's notice to stop one thing to jump into another thing. That turns into 6 or 7 things at a time on a regular basis, like today. And she pulls this all together. I don't quite know how. I try to pay attention, watch, and learn, but it doesn't work so well. But she does it. So I definitely admire what she does. I admire how she does it, I don't quite understand, which is cool. You know, I can admit that. But this wouldn't be happening without her. She is definitely really instrumental. I mean, the biggest part of what we do. You know, I can get on the camera and, you know, break a wall or, you know, jump out of a window or, you know, get blown up or something, but she orchestrates that from the start to the end. And it has to be difficult, you know, and you never really understand how difficult it is until someone you're close to lets you in on that side of the negotiation. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, much love to Donna. Yeah, well, I should say that, though, about, well, of course, much love to Donna, but to my entire team, my small yet loyal and dedicated team, because my people hump. My people really hump. They meet the supply and demand of the world of Team Green, and I know it's not easy. I'm not an easy person to work with and to get along with. You know, I'm very stubborn and difficult at times.
No, really?
Yeah, right. Yeah, you should know. You know, and I put people through the paces. You know, we had a small meeting today where we met up with Liz, and we were just talking about all the different things that need to happen with the sites and because of everything that's coming up in September through November. And, you know, I'm sitting there and I'm rattling off this and that and this and that. And then I'm looking and I thought, I should probably have wrote some of this stuff down. And they start laughing because I'm going just off the top of my head the things I can think of. And, you know, you get
right.
12 or 13 things, you start needing a list. Okay, well, let's categorize and prioritize. Well, in my mind, it's already categorized and prioritized. And it never worked out that way. But, it's, you know, the team Green putting forth their efforts to make our world work. Is, I know it's not easy, and, you know, to all involved, to Liz and my wife and you, Flav, you know, I don't sleep on your efforts. Deep heartfelt gratitude, because I know I'm not an easy person to work with, and It's but you guys make it work, you know, and the results are there. They're everywhere. So, to you all,
I think in a sense, Don, you're easy. You know, yes, you know, there can be difficult moments, you know, but in a sense, you're easy to work with because the passion is real. There's no faking the funk with you, you know,
mm-hmm.
and so. You know, this is not a game. This is something you're very, very serious about, you know, and you are going to recognize when something needs to be done differently. And you know, take those steps to, you know, to work through that or whatever. And so, you know, I do think that you have an absolutely amazing team behind you. And the reason why I wanted to talk about John Jr. is because, I mean, it's very clear he's following in his dad's footsteps. But when it comes to Donna, I know she's like the backbone. I know it. I mean, I've had conversations with Donna, and she so loves you. She so loves you and believes in you. And I think that's something that's very important when you are a family person, that your family is there with you. Because I think that sometimes when an artist, creative soul wants to get out there, there's not always that support and understanding from the family. And you clearly have that. You clearly have that, you know. And I know that Donna is so instrumental in making your world work. So I appreciate, you know, you being willing to share, you know, about your family. I do want to come back to kind of talking about LJ in a minute when it comes to the acting. But I do want to play another piece, John. It actually is one of my favorite vocal pieces by you. And I absolutely love the video to this particular piece. It's haunting and beautiful at the same time. I'm going to play Lost in Darkness by John D. Green Sr. John D. Green Sr., who is my featured guest tonight on the Leopard Carpet. So, John, Ruby has asked you to speak about this particular piece.
Oh, we're going dark. I know it is, buddy. We're going dark time, huh? Okay. It's that song is, like I said, the title says a lot about the song, and you know, I write most of my music, or all of my music basically, is either directly related to me or indirectly. So all the music usually about me, you know, people I encounter, things I encounter, different times and periods in my life. And that one, boy, whew, that was a very dark and down time in my life. You know, the only consistent thing that I had going on was in the beginning of that piece. If you notice, there's a portion of a composition. There's a few minutes of piano composition for the beginning of that piece. And that
right.
was a composition that I've been writing for 7 years at the time. And that I put that in there for several reasons. For one, that beginning compositional piece, you know, set to piano was very anger, emotionally angry filled piece, and it worked really well for the structure of the song. For two, when playing it, it seemed to kind of help me vent some of the anger that I was experiencing. That was a very dark and lost time, you know, my daughter and being pregnant and just, you know, the life not measuring up to your expectations, and more importantly, me not measuring up to my own expectations that were very realistic at the time, yet I wasn't living up to them, you know, and it got the better of me, because there comes a point in everybody's life when they realize, okay, some dreams, some expectations are unrealistic, but other dreams and expectations are very realistic, and we're In your words, we're in our own way of achieving them. And you have to make a decision. Are you not achieving them because you cannot, or are you not achieving them because you are not trying?
Mm-hmm.
And accepting the realization that it was because I wasn't trying, I wasn't applying myself in the right way, I was wasting time, and I was, you know, feeling low and confused over things that I could figure out if I wanted to deal with the pain of what was real. Because to understand something, be it good or bad, is the only true way to closure to what ails you, pretty much. And coming to all those realizations at once is just a bathroom mirror moment, I like to call it. And it all hit at once, and I had to deal with it. And part of dealing with it was that song. So that song, it was just, you know, but not being, having my daughter in my life, and then when I did have her in my life, my daughter is having a child, and just trying to explain to her and having her explain to me her feelings and trying to understand where I was and why I wasn't there and that I'm back now, and then how do you say, you know, how do you tell someone that you dearly love, that you've been there, you know, the whole time, and you tell them the real situation when they've learned something entirely different, and you're
right.
You expect them to believe you. You really want them to believe you in your heart, but how do they believe that? Now she's an adult, and she's looking to me for answers, and the answers are all painful. There is no easy answer unless it's a lie, and I don't deal in lies. So it was just one of those times, you know, and probably one of my lowest points in life was just to, and that for me was kind of my release, was to put it into this song and like cast it into the universe and just let, you know, the universe hear the pain through the song and kind of understand if that's possible. And in my world, it's very possible. You know, in my world, it happens on a daily basis. So, and that's why
the
song came about.
Right. The thing is you also created a video off of this piece. So not only can we feel it through just listening, we have the opportunity to watch it visually. And in the video, it takes it to a different level, too.
Yeah. We actually, my son is the main star in the video, and I use my son in the video to show that and a lot of people disagreed with this. It was to show that, you know, sometimes in your mind, your thoughts that you have, you're so confused. It's almost like being a child. It's it's incredibly confusing to process things. Like as a child, you didn't understand why you couldn't get the candy. You didn't understand why mom didn't have the money or why, you know, someone else's family got them ice cream and you didn't, or why you couldn't get that toy. It, you didn't process that because in your mind it was, I want candy, I don't have candy, I have a problem with that. Until you come to the realization of what is, you don't understand it. And sometimes us not understanding things makes us childlike. And if you notice in the beginning of the video, my son is wiping his face and he's walking up the stairs. And then when we get to the bathroom where I'm looking in the mirror, it's me again. And that was just a director's view of, you know, sometimes we're like children. You know, we don't understand. Things are scary. Life is scary. And he's outside and it's dark and it's, you know, we put all these bad situations in play into this video. There was a part in the video that we had to edit that I was playing the piano outside and it was raining and the lightning struck my keyboard while I was playing. So we had to edit that out, but the strike was so bright that it blinded out everything, but it was beautiful footage and we wanted to keep it. Yeah.
Okay.
It was awesome. My wife actually shot that video.
Did she?
My wife actually shot that video. And she was standing, here's the funny thing, here's some background story for just my friends and fans. My wife was standing 2 feet away from me in the shower, in that bathroom, during the bulk of the video. And and a lot of the different pictures and fillers that were used was done by Louis 25K. But the main video footage was shot by my wife. Yep, Donna was she was the cinematography director. Yeah, see, she wears a lot of hats.
Multi-talented.
Oh,
Okay. So, you know, I think the beautiful thing about that particular piece, and I think that Ruby would agree, is I think when it comes to art, art is extremely powerful. You hear me talk about this all the time, you know, especially if you can create something that digs into our emotions. And the beautiful thing about that particular piece, you know, as I say, is beautifully haunting. I believe that it allows us to feel a dark side. That's just part of life. That just really is a part of life. And for us to ignore that is, in a sense, you know, not giving life the appreciation, you know, of the realities of it. And so, you know, I think that, you know, it gives us a power. You know, it allows us to relate to something and then to say to somebody, you know, thank you for creating that because, you know, you were in my head. This is how I have felt, you know, or whatever. And so, you know, and I'll say, you know, thank you, you know, for creating that, John. Because
thank you for listening. That song has moved a lot of people, and I'm really grateful for it because, like I said, it was one of the darkest times in my life, and it was written for me. And then, you know, Donna and my team and Liz, everybody's like, you know what, put that song out there. Let people hear it because people can identify me. You're not the only one that had dark times. Let them hear it to give everyone something to identify with. You never know. And that was probably the greatest move they ever told me because a lot of the music wouldn't have been released if it weren't for them, you know, because if you know, it was for me. And I moved on it because, you know, they said other people can relate to that, man. And you're, you know, you holding it back is not being, you know, share it, you know, share it. I like you just said about fear. Fear is scary. I mean, to be afraid of anything or to be sad or scared, it's a scary thing. But you know what? It's a necessary thing. And we all got to deal with our fears in different ways. But when you do, man, what a feeling that is to no longer be afraid, to no longer be afraid. We actually need fear. It is a necessary evil. You know, And people, they don't deal with fear directly enough. People like, I can't be made afraid. I can't. No, you can, and you should, because then you deal with it.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, for us, ignore. Right.
Yeah. Well,
no, if anybody has not ever seen this particular video, you know, I would really, really suggest that you Google Lost in Darkness by John D. Green Sr. I don't know if it would. I know sometimes when I have gone to YouTube and put your name in, sometimes I have to do it different ways to finally get you to come up. But I think that if you also if you put Bayless in, it might come up. But
If you go to YouTube and you type in Bayless Green, B A Y L I S S Green, G R E E N together, one word. There's a lot of videos. There's a lot of different videos on YouTube.
So definitely go to YouTube and check out the videos by John D. Green Sr. Now, I just want you to let you know, John, that there are a lot of people that are actually listening on the phone. And you know, Jace from Black Stacks has been listening most of the show. He is busy, you know, right now doing something, but he wanted to tune in and listen by phone. Stephen is also on the phone. Kevin has been on and off on the phone. And there's some other callers. I don't know the area code. So there are a lot of people actually on the phone right now. But I'm going to bring in Josh Man Rock. Welcome to the Leopard Carpet with John D. Green Sr., Josh.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm happy to be here. And I'm glad to hear John D. Green Sr. On the airwaves. It's awesome.
Oh, cool. What's up, brother? You all right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm glad to appreciate you inviting me in because I have some questions for you. And, you know, being the person that I am, I'm always trying to learn. And, you know, you can't ever think that you know everything. So I appreciate the opportunity to let me pick your brain a little bit.
We might learn some things together.
Yes, sir. So the first thing I want to say, I appreciate, you know, you being so transparent in your answers, you know, to the questions and stuff like that, because what you were talking about your son really kind of hit me, because I feel like that's how I learned. You know, I learned from my brother, you know, the same kind of way, you know, just by listening and everything. I thought that was really cool. And then on the darker stuff, you know, I agree with Lady Flava about, you know, that being part of life, you know, and it's cool to kind of see, you know, some of the range you have. I think that's pretty cool.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. I wish you could say again.
Yeah, go. Oh, I just have a couple questions for you, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Talk about, if you will, about having a muse or maybe your inspiration for your songs.
For this particular song?
Well, not that one in particular. I kind of wrote down the answer, then you went into it a little bit about you said you're a person that writes the songs about what he's feeling at the moment. Is that
right?
Kind of how you write your songs?
Right. Most of my music is emotion-based. It depends on how I'm feeling. It's how the music comes out. It's usually written based on emotion. And I know that's not a good thing to admit, but it is what it is, and, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So,
well, I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing to admit. Really,
well,
you
it's
know,
not
because
I wouldn't want people to think that, okay, this guy's a songwriter, but he can't write unless he's mad or sad or scared. No, I write people, but when it's my music, when I'm writing for me, then usually it's based off something that has happened or something that I know that will happen or that is happening. It's usually based on me, you know, pages from different chapters of the book of my life is what I like to say. My music. It's usually written about, it's usually emotionally based, and it's based off of my life's experiences.
Cool. I like that. That's neat. You've never heard it like that.
You can feel free to use them.
Okay. I might just do that. We got that on recording now. All right. So a couple more things. You talked a little bit about the support, and you talked about your team. Do you think it takes a team to be successful in being a musician?
Well, you know, I think, now, I will say this. I think people can do it. I think you get a musician out there that's just hot to trot and the cat's meow and he's putting it down and doing all his networking and, you know, giving out music and getting venues and booking shows and, you know, doing the show. I think it can be done. I personally don't think I could have done it without my team, because there were many times when I am supposed to be many places at one time for whatever reasons. Once you commit to certain things, you're obligated to fulfill your commitments. And in our business, it's very important. It only takes one time for one person to say, oh, man, this guy didn't show up for this or that or whatever. There are many times that my team has shown up in place of me for different things. If it was just something where we were there to represent for whatever event, different reaching out to different people at different times to get music heard or to submit resumes or different auditions or different scenes that were in films that I didn't audition for. Someone has to make all these contacts and talk to all these people. And this happens every day. Now, you can do some of it. And, I mean, there are people out there that do that network from dusk to dawn. I'm not one of them. It's not my strong area. So someone like me has to be smart enough to say, hey, Donna, listen, can you head up this? Could you, you know, plug this in and log this? And could you arrange this and set this up? Hey, Liz, listen, can you tighten up this site? Can you make sure you reach out to these people and do this and that? And Mr. Peel, I need some advice. You have to know your strengths and your weaknesses, and you have to be strong enough to say, I am not good. I'm not well-versed in this area. Can you step up for me and make this happen? It's necessary. It's more than necessary. But I believe there are people that can do it. I personally don't think I could have, nor do I think I would have, had it not been for the support of my team. So I hope I answered that well.
Yeah. No, it definitely did. Because that's, I guess that's kind of my feeling as well. Because I kind of feel like a man, you know, the old adage, you know, jack of all trades, master at nothing. And, you know, I don't believe that you can really be 100% in all the avenues that you have to you know, pursue in the music industry. And
right.
Not necessarily even to get a record deal, but just to get yourself out there and known. And,
okay.
You know, that's always kind of my feeling about it, and I just wanted to, you know, get somebody else's opinion on that too.
It's really hard to be honest with yourself about, especially people like us. I mean, you think about it, we got creativity that runs in our blood. It's the only thing in the world that can make you stop mid-bite during dinner and run into the studio and stay there for 3 days. It's what we have in us is like it's addictive. You know what I'm talking about. You've been having a deep conversation with your loved one and stop mid-sentence and walk away. And we expect them to understand that because it is who we are and it's what we do. But at the same time, to ask people for help. I mean, I can compose music, I think, with the best of them. I'll sit down with anyone at any time. But when it comes to producing the music, I had to learn the hard way that, dude, there are just some things you're not good at, bro. You know, and as much as I want to be good at it, don't get me wrong, I love to be the best. But I'm not,
yeah.
You know. And then we got people like SJF that just like a miracle delivery into my life because this is what he does, and he does it better than most. And he stepped in and was like, you know, I'll show you this and I'll show you that and I'll help you out with this and I'll help you out with that. It just it happened, man. I had to make a choice. Oh, man, I could do this on my own. I don't need, or do I say what an intelligent person would say, would be like, yes, please, show me the ropes. Teach me what I need to know, Stephen, and along the way. You know, you can do this for me. Show me how. Do this with me and help me, because he was all about the help. It was entirely up to me to accept that help. The intelligent person would accept it graciously and try to learn from someone with Stephen's ability and skill. So that's the route I went. But it's hard to do, man. You got to be true to yourself to surrender that kind of power. When it's your
especially when you have a talent level, you know,
right. And
you have a way of doing things and you have a methodology that works for you. And
but
to
no
allow somebody else to kind of take control of that a little bit and maybe steer the ship, you know, more than you want. I understand it's hard.
It is, but you know what? My partner in rhyme, Guy Williams Jr., says it best. You know, he says, hey, whether you're navigating the ship or you're rowing the ship, we're going to get somewhere. So, and he's right, man. You know, I especially when it comes to people like, you know, Kevin Hyde or Steven or DeLon, even when it comes to, like, centralizing the range of the voice or understanding the tone and not the tone. I'll take an or in a second, man, because you got to know your role. And if your role is everything, you got to be able to fill that role. You know, we can't all be the captains of the ship. You know, I don't mind being a first mate. I do my part because, you know, it's going to benefit you. So I guess that would be the answer to that question. It's just knowing your strengths and your weaknesses, accepting that and acting on it.
Awesome. Cool. That kind of leads me right into my next point, or next question, is, you know, professionalism. You know, what do you think it takes to be a professional musician?
You know, I'm still trying to learn that one, buddy. I would love to be able to give you some spiel about, oh, I'm so professional. But to be honest with you, there's a lot of degrees of professionalism. I mean, I know a lot of musicians that can get to live shows or get in the studio and they can really lay it down, but their personal ethics are, you know, submarginal at best. I know a lot of musicians that are really people person and they're phenomenal, but their music is submarginal at best. I think it's a combination of all these things plus the above and beyond that you will go to A, learn, B, teach, and C, assist with the musical process. I think that is the signature staple of professionalism. But again, this is just my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
This is just my opinion, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And I think that that was a great answer.
Well, thank you.
I'm sorry, Josh. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, no, please. I thought you had more to say. I'm sorry.
Oh, you know me.
You know me, too. I'm trying not to take over your airwaves.
No, but you know what? I think that you've asked some really, really great questions. You know, and the beautiful thing about you, Josh, is that you're very thoughtful with what you say, you know, with how you support and what you say, you know, and the questions you want, or, you know, maybe even just a point that you would like to hear, you know, an artist speak on or whatever. And so to then in turn have an artist like John thoughtfully respond. And I think that in itself is part of the success of an artist, you know, because there's so much more than just the talent. You know, and the artist plays a very, very instrumental role in their success, from attitude to, you know, work ethics to being personable to, you know, I mean, there's just so many things that go into the success of an artist. But I do agree with you, Josh, and I do agree with you, John, that, you know, it's important to have a team behind you. I do think that there are artists that can maybe do it on their own, but, oh, my goodness, you know, just being Lady Flava can be draining.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so to think about being an artist and having to play all roles and wear all the hats of what it takes to get out there and to be successful, that is, you know, just even thinking about it just makes me want to to yawn and curl up in bed. So I think there's so much more to, you know, to it, you know, than what a lot of people think. It's not just the talent.
Mm-hmm. It's not, but then you talk about the team, and we'll go back again to the team, and this must be said. When people really put together a team, do you have a team? We can all put together a team of yes men. I can put together a 100-man yes man team by tonight. Very easily put together an entire team of yes men to do what I say and when I say it and how I say it and book me here and book me there and tell me I'm golden. But when you put together a team, it is imperative that your team, each person be an individual. They be at the top of the game of what they do, and more importantly, they tell you when what you are doing or not doing is or isn't right. Now, that in itself is a whole other aspect of what we do. Do you hear your team, and do you listen to your team? I have a team. My team is me. Okay, my team is tight. I have, you know, everyone knows my wife. You know, I have Liz, you know, Liz Finn. And I'll tell them, okay, I want this, I want that. I want this lined up, I want this set up, blah, blah, blah. What are you doing? Well, I'm doing this. Well, this isn't what I just asked you to do, whatever. I'll have them say, hold on, listen. Sit down and look at the screen. And they'll break it all down, and I'll realize how backwards what I was doing was. And then they just give me that, yeah, it's okay, we know. Because they know I'm kind of a, let's do it, let's get it done, come on, let's move on this. But I count on them to set the pace. Like, okay, I'm going to let you blow all your steam, and then we're going to do it the right way because you're going to screw this up, big boy. It's kind of what you do. So you depend on your team. If you have a team, how far do you allow your team to go in their individuality? You know, my wife is her own individual, and a lot of times I'm barking and woofing and this and that, and she looks at me. And I know the look. You know, it's that shut the hell up look, but without saying it, she'll let me get it all out, and then she'll start on whatever process, and I'll look, and it'll be completely different, much better and workable, as opposed to my chopped up, backwards, half-stepping, getting it, you know, kind of just stuffed in the, you know, stuffed in the circle in the square kind of deal. You know, and Liz the same way. They listen to me rant and rave, and then they go about it. They check in with me, I check in with them, and we make it work, but I'm not, I have to trust their ability, the reasons in which I brought them in, the reasons in which I asked these people to, you know, embark upon this journey with me, because they're all professional. Flavor's right there. You know, Flavor's one of the number one. She knows I bark a lot. You know, I bark and I got things I want to say and stuff I want done, but just because you want it doesn't make it right. So do you trust your team to do what you ask them to do, or are you telling them what to do? Because if that's the case, then it's no longer a team. It's you being the boss and barking orders and people doing it, even if they know it's not right. And I personally don't need that. That's why I have a team of individual thinkers with skill sets on their own. That's what makes my team better than everyone else's team. No, I'm just kidding. But I'm not really. But I'm just kidding. Yeah.
I hope a lot of young artists hear that, you know, and really absorb it, you know, because what you said is so important, you know, and I couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. So, and it has to do with professionalism, and being a professional is not knowing everything, you know, knowing what you know, knowing what you don't know. Let people that you don't know, you know, if you don't know something, let somebody handle that, you know, let somebody be the expert on that. You don't have to be everything to everybody.
Right.
You know? And so I think that's really important for, you know, any kind of artist to understand.
Absolutely.
I have one more question for you, and then I'll get off the air. It's about I've always thought there's a correlation between being on stage and being a musician, because I was one. I'm a singer, but and acting, and I know you do some acting. Do you find being a musician helps out your acting skills, or you know?
Absolutely. It's very closely related. I mean, a lot of people may disagree, but I think it's very closely related. You're delivering a performance. It, just like when you're on stage, you're delivering a performance, but you're singing or you're playing an instrument. Up there, you're also playing an instrument, but the instrument that you're playing with is your mind, and you're manipulating your mind to deliver a certain character to make everyone that's watching you believe that you are no longer you. You are this character. You know, for all the characters that I've played, I need you first and foremost to go in there saying, this is this character. He's no longer John D. Green Sr. John is gone. John has left the building, and he's been replaced with this guy that I hate or this guy that I love, you know, or this confused individual or this very confident man here or this slightly twisted, deviant psycho. I need you to believe that, and I need you to believe it whether I'm slashing someone to death or whether I'm crying in the corner. I need you to believe it throughout the performance. For however many hours we'll be there, you'll be in the studio, you'll be watching this in the theater, and I'm on that screen. You need to believe this. So much so that when you see me on the street, the first thing you think is my character's name. And then you think, oh, wait a minute, no, it's John D. Green Sr. Hey, it's a performance. Mm-hmm. No different than performing on a stage. You want everyone to feel every single note that you lay down for the entire show. You want them humming it even if they don't know the words. And we've all done that. Get a song you like, the beat. I get that to Jason Mraz. Until I learned the words, I was just humming it. I didn't know not one word, but I knew the melody. Yeah. It happens. And that's what you want. It's performance of the performance. You have to deliver, and it has to be believable. So, yeah, there's a direct relation, I think, between acting and music.
Very cool, very cool. Well, hey, thank you so much for letting me spend half hour with you, rapping with you and all that. And thank you, Lady Flavor, for allowing me to be on the show. Much love, and I guess I will talk to you all later.
Cool.
All right, thank you so much, Josh.
All right, no problem.
Well, that was awesome. I think great questions. And with that, you know, great responses. So, you know, Josh touched on, and this was the next subject that I wanted to bring up before we run out of time, is your acting. So talk about how you got into it in the first place and where, got involved in acting. How did that that thought come about to then the projects that you were involved in as an actor?
No, it's funny. You always hear people say necessity is the mother of invention, and that pretty much was a necessity. It was we were sitting here. I lost my job. Things were so rough, and Donna saw something about an audition on a site or something. It was something silly. She was like, you know what? I'm gonna submit your pictures and stuff to this place. And you're gonna go and audition. I was like, I don't know nothing about acting, you know, whatever. She was like, just go and whatever they tell you to do. I was like, okay, you know, no problem, cool. And that's exactly what we did. You know, I'm standing in here with all these seasoned actors and, you know, their resumes, this and that, and I'm standing there. And so I look around at all of them. And they, you know, it's really good-looking guys, all of them. And I'm thinking, wow, these are some, you know, really talented guys, you know. I'm watching them go over their lines and stuff. So when we get a lull in the conversation, about 40 people, I look around the room and I say, listen, all you guys should probably just go home. Save yourself the embarrassment of this day. This role is mine. But you've been warned. You can sit through it if you like. I mean, if you're a glutton for punishment, then please, by all means, sit here and watch me get the role. But in case you were wondering what will take place today, I'll get this role. It'll be mine, and you'll be going home without it. But you can sit and clap for me, you know, while I do my audition. It's a perfunctory, though. And I sat back down. I didn't say anything else. Now, mind you, I was just kidding. Like, I was just having fun. It seemed like a funny thing to do. I thought it would shake up the room and, you know, get people just looking at me thinking, oh, this guy's a jerk. But then I got the role. Mm-hmm. Okay. It's pretty cool. Yeah, that worked out pretty well.
Right.
And from there on, I started noticing that the acting thing was a lot like our real life. Within every character that you play, there's a little bit of you, of the real you, within every character you play, no matter how slimy the character is. There's something in his ideals or his disposition or his beliefs that you share with the real you. And you can build upon that to build the character into your own likeness. And it's a very strange metamorphosis. It's a real process, but it's exciting because after a while you can feel this guy's personality. You become this guy for a while, and it's exciting and it's scary because, you know, depending on the character, you become this guy. And
right.
He's horrible. And you're horrible because you've made yourself horrible because you've read his backstory.
Right.
You understand everything about it. And then you try it on different people, the role, and you see the reaction, and it's like, okay, yeah. And you're kind of scary, dude. And you realize that, okay, for a few seconds in time, you are him. And then,
right.
Of course, you're you again. So it's an exciting thing, and it's awesome, but it all started out with just one day we took a chance. Hey, do we want to invest in something and take a chance? We didn't know if it would pan out, if we would get any roles, you know, would it be a waste of money to go through an agency? We had no idea, but we had nothing left. We had no other options, and I was pretty confident that I could do it. I, you know, told myself I'll do this and I'll make it work. You know, I'll make it work. She said, can you do this? Yes, I can. She's like, okay, let's move forward. Haven't looked backwards since.
So can you share with us about the projects that you can speak on?
I can speak on past projects, and I can speak on projects. We'll keep it vague and loose. How's that? I did some pilot work for MTV called Muse Crew. I played an aggravated businessman. Most fun I probably ever had because I was working for Ryan DeSilva, and he's a comedy genius. And I hadn't done any comedy. Everything I had done had been very dramatic. So to work with him was just a breath of fresh air, and it's a lot harder to not laugh than we may think it is. We see these actors all the time being so serious in these hilarious situations, and they're playing it. They're dead serious. Well, it's harder than it looks. And he's just the funniest guy ever, and he's a very talented director. I got to work with Tom Henry. Tom Henry is the action karate shoot 'em up guy of our time. He's the man. And I got to work on the Act of Vengeance film with Tom Henry. I did a one-day shoot. I was a shotgun hoodlum, you know, and that was a pretty exciting role. Yeah, I would love to have been in that film more, but, you know, it was what it was. I got to work with Gary Bosick, director/actor Gary Bosick. The way his mind works is part of the joy of working with Gary Bosick is watching Gary Bosick work because his mind works like an actor, yet he's a talented and gifted director. So for the role that you play, I play the boxer in the Ice Bus film. He is just, he can get into your mental space to see where you are. And he can determine from where you are where you should be. And it's easy to take direction that way when someone knows your motivation and they're there with you. He's definitely a director that is just truly gifted. I'm currently working with John Tillotson. He is the director of The Spirit of Mumbai. Wow. Huge film. You know, it's multicultural film, very in-depth film, very exciting, very touchy subject matter. I get to play a really slimy character in this film, and it's cool. you know, don't get me wrong, I really enjoy my character. I enjoy being hated, and I definitely enjoy being a bad guy's bad guy. It's always fun. I hate to admit that. I hope there are no children listening, but I enjoy that. you know, because there are just things that you can do in film that you can't do in real life, and
sure.
Some of it is, you know, fun. A lot of it is actually fun, and I have a few other projects coming up now. I got cast in Oz, the new Oz, the new Wizard of Oz called Oz the Great and Powerful,
mm-hmm.
and of course I can't speak much on that, but it's a big role. It's I got to work to have a little faith film. That was definitely exciting. I worked as a church parishioner. That was always cool, you know, because of the lineup, and Lawrence Fishburne is in that movie. That was a lot of fun. It was very exciting. The wardrobe was awesome. You know, my 1960s wardrobe, very cool.
Okay.
I've had the opportunity to do quite a few films now, and they're all exciting. I got
it's
to work
such
with
a short
myself.
Amount of time. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
well,
such a short amount of time, John.
Team Green, you know. I got Donna and Liz and Flav, and, you know, I got my people on the clock constantly.
Right.
We're always looking for the next big thing and the opportunities that we feel that we can, you know, if we can commit to them, we can deliver. When we look for things based on what we know we can do, you know, we stay within our means and we try not to stress ourselves or stretch ourselves, but we make it work. And part of making it work is doing it, you know, only getting out there, and it's always exciting. It's very, very exciting and fulfilling to be a part of it, of that world, to see how it works and to be engrossed in it, if you know what I mean.
So speak briefly, John, about LJ, you know, getting into the acting thing too.
His very first film that he worked on was he got to do a Tim Green film, no doubt. My son was able to nail a role in a Tim Green film, Little Homies. And he was very gifted. Watching my son work on film was an amazing experience because, you know, I learned quite a few things from him that day. And, you know, we had to go back to the set several times. You know, it was a long shoot, especially for a kid. I got to work on the same film with him. So that was a big treat for me because it was his first film, and it was the first film we've done together.
Okay.
So it was very exciting watching him work. My son is the true professional. And it was just exciting, you know, scenes that he was in that I wasn't in. I got to watch him from a distance and just kind of admire who he is and, you know, who I think he'll be. It was just very, very exciting. And then the scenes that we were in together, to watch him deliver and, you know, when it was time to be scared, and when it was time to be a little smart butt, to be a little smart butt, and knowing that, you know, he's probably laughing on the inside because he gets to say these things to me that he would never normally say. But we're shooting this film, and he's one of the good guys, and I'm one of the bad guys. It was an amazing experience to work opposite him in the same film where, you know, we're standing face to face, and we're, you know, it's about to go down, and he's one of the guys opposing me, opposing my hostile takeover, and he's a child, and there were dynamics there, you know, because he plays a role well. He can be scared when he's supposed to be scared. He can be brave when he's supposed to be brave, and he can do it at the director's request. So it made working with him just a joy and a delight. And then to be able to discuss it later, of course, that was awesome. So
how did this all come about with LJ getting into this?
We just started. We didn't go through the Who You Know channels. We did it the way like I did it. We kind of started submitting his resume and his comp card and his headshot, and we just to see who would take a bite, you know. And when he got that one, it was just based off what they knew of him from his resume and his comp card and his headshot.
So was this something that was his choice or you and Donna's choice?
Well, he's been wanting to act for years. But when the opportunity came about, when Michigan really opened up, then we decided, okay, well, let's see what he can do, because auditioning for a child is very hard. It's not kid gloves, as you would think. They're very direct and to the point. You know, a million kids, and if you can't deliver, the next kid can, and he's prepared to. So for my son to go to these auditions, it was brutal because I couldn't hold his hand, you know. You can't coach him through it. I'm big on that, you know, for martial arts or everything that has to do with him. The instructor is the instructor. The director is the director. You know, until my title says director, then I let the director direct. I don't get in the way. I'm not one of those parents. So he had to do it. His auditions, he had to audition for himself. And it's really hard, and he did it. And that's when I knew he'll be all right, because they're brutal. Right. You watch kids melt down all the time. You know, and he had his moment, and he snapped out of it. I asked him, what did you come here to do? And he told me, I came here to audition and get this movie. I said, then do it. He bucked up and shined. I mean, he surprised me.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that was very cool.
Okay, go ahead, LJ. Well, you know, I'm just, you know, we're going to run out of time. This could potentially go into the archive, so if anybody wants to join us on the phone and just hang out to listen, please feel free to do so. The call-in number is 347-857-1189. I don't want to miss out on you having the opportunity to talk about Sabuda, but before you talk about it, I'm going to go ahead and play Heirlooms by Sabuda.
I blame you, but I don't hold you responsible. I came to realize we're all dysfunctional. I love you despite all of the stunts you pull. I hope they show you I'm wonderful, yeah.
I reluctantly bid you farewell. Goodbye. Though I'd share hell with you, you don't want me there. You stare like I'm ugly and wrong. The gong's continuous, our stimulus packages spent. My dents read a future too pure for you. Through your manure, my flower still grew. My stew is flavored by your stock. My clock begins in your hands. I know I fan the fire, but my desire for change is consuming. Removing stains, my OCD. I'm doing things hopelessly, knowing it's me who pilots my plane. The frame encasing your picture has splinters at its base. Trying to quote me scriptures puts blisters on my face. I forever chase a spirit day dream. The machine seems in need of oil. I feel I'm the foil in your microwave stores. Long after it's spoiled, my egg is still boiling. The spades I'm withholding uke your whole deck. My neck is finally off the chopping block. If we can't stop, we can't continue. try to be mad, but only end up feeling sorry for you.
Angry.
I'm partly removed because I'm used to the absence. Yet clothed by your fashion, my passion runs deep. I make you compete with fantasy scenes, screens from 50s TV shows. I know it's an unfair comparison, but I share in the weight as well. I'm compelled by the spell of invisible forces, courses led by issues, miscues set in tissues, wired into my framework. The same shirt worn by grandmother's past, a task to be shattered before tatters can mend. Our friends are mirrors, clearer view than our own, a commonality shown by flattery and batteries feeding off one another. My mother's my portrait, her forfeit's my failure. I'm only a whaler, she is my Marley. If she'd start thinking smartly, she'd part with her job. See, it's hardly her legend when her mother's her Bob.
Heirloom passed down generations. Heirloom looming my dreams. Heirloom passed down. Now heirloom in my dream. I blame you, but I don't hold you responsible. I came to realize we're all dysfunctional. I love you. Despite all of the stunts you pull, I hope to one day show you I'm wonderful, wonderful, wonderful.
All right, that was Heirloom by Sabuda, and Sabuda makes up of my special guest, my featured guest tonight, John D. Green Sr., and his partner in crime, Guy Williams Jr. And this particular piece, they actually performed live just a few days ago out there in Michigan. So, John, talk about Sabuda before we run out of time.
Just a few nights ago, yeah, we are. Sabuda is a revolutionary movement in music and in poetry. It's definitely different. You know, I'm working with a very talented poet. Like you said before, Guy Williams Jr. is formerly of the group My Head Radio out of Amsterdam. Talented group, very talented individual. And we collaborate together to form Sabuda, and it's been a very beautiful experience. All the music is original, and definitely all the words. He writes the words, and I write the music, and we merge the two to form this duo of do. So it's pretty exciting. We got to perform live. We were at the Artist Village in a last-minute deal, and we got to do Heirlooms live, and ended up having a full band, which was amazing. And we ended up getting after doing an encore, which doesn't really happen there often. It was a very exciting time. Very, very exciting time. And I like Sabuda. I like the messages that we get to deliver in that way. You know, I like the way he words things. I like the way he says things. And it definitely captures a lot of the thought and feeling behind how we both feel about a lot of things. So, yeah. Sabuda is, it's exciting. It's exciting. I think it's an acquired sound.
It definitely is unique. And I think that's what makes it stand out, is that there's such an authenticity to it that, you know, I've dealt with spoken word artists and musicians, of course, and, you know, those that combined the two, but I've not ever heard, you know, anything that is like this particular collaboration and combination. And so, you know, I think that's what brings the beauty to Sabuda. And I look forward to, you know, hearing and being able to share that particular sound, you know, on my radio shows and, you know, just seeing where you and Guy take, you know, this new venture of Sabuda. Now, John, I'm curious. You know, I'm like, okay, what can I say in the next 5 minutes? Out of all the creative parts that make up John D. Green Sr., what is your favorite?
Wow. I don't know. Probably just, you know, being dad. You know, in the end, I'm dad. It's, you know. Even keeping it more real than that, I like being a fan. I'm very excited about being a fan. The fact that I can hear things and still enjoy them and see things and still enjoy them and I can still, you know, contact somebody on Facebook or, you know, just talk to people and be in awe of what they do. That part for me is probably one of the most exciting parts, and I often hope and pray that never goes away. I want to remain a loyal fan to what I like forever, you know. I never want to get so full of me that I can no longer appreciate other people's flavor. I enjoy being a fan, Flav. It's, to me, it's, you know, I do enjoy that part.
Well, before we cut off, and again, if anybody wants to call in very quick, because this is going to go a little over into the archives, the call-in number is 347-857-1189. Otherwise, I do want to thank everybody who has hung out in the chat room today, to those that were hanging out on the phone, to those that were hanging out in the wings. You know, this was a great, great feature. You know, I'm like, okay, what else can I say to John that has not been said on my show or other shows that he's been featured on? But I think that we were able to shake it up a little bit today and get to, you know, really, really hear a little bit more depth about, you know, this amazing, amazing man and amazing and gifted artist. So, again, thank you so much, everybody who's tuned in live. Now, John, I've got just a few more questions I want to ask of you before we close out the show. And I know that you are a martial artist, and I'm just kind of curious, do you think that your background in martial arts has played any type of role in your creativity?
The discipline aspect of it, yes, I definitely think so. I've worn a lot of hats. I've been a lot of things. I've been an instructor, I've been a bodyguard, I've been a bouncer, I've been a cooler. I've worked in the private security sector. I've done a lot of things, and each of these things require extreme discipline. So I think when it comes to the discipline, it definitely has helped. I believe it has helped me to stay steadfast and on course and on track. So, yeah, definitely that.
Okay. I kind of thought you might go in that direction. So, cool. Because I just get a sense that there, when I see, you know, the pictures of you and kind of in my own mind visualize you possibly what it would be like to see you walking down the street or whatever, I just feel a sense that you are a very proud man, that you walk very, very erect, and that, you know, you take things so very serious, and that your capabilities when it comes to, you know, martial arts is, I think, something that's very much a part of you. And wondered, you know, where this might play a role. And I sense that it could, you know, come into play when it comes to the discipline aspect of it. Because, you know, I think that people think it's all about, you know, being able to whoop somebody's behind, you know, or whatever, and defend, you know. And I think that they don't go in the direction of, you know, there's so much more to that. Now, my last question that I wanted to ask you is, as an artist, as a creative soul, as a dad and a husband, you know, do you think, but more so as an artist, since that's what we're really talking about, do you feel responsible as an artist, as a public figure in being a role model, setting an example, what it is that you can bring to those outside of your family and your core team?
Absolutely. And, you know, for any artist that says he doesn't, he's not a role model, well, then he's in the wrong business. Because whether you like it or not, or whether you accept it or not, or whether you know it or not, there are people listening. A lot of the people that are listening these days are youth. They listen to everything you say, how you say it. What you represent is what they hear and they understand. Children will listen to famous artists, Eminem and the likes, before they listen to their parents. What you say matters. So make sure what you say matters, because they're listening. And if you think you're not a role model, then you're in the wrong business. You know, I try to make sure that my personal music, my music, John D. Green Sr. music, is very clean. And I mean, anyone could use a bunch of vulgarities or whatever, but I don't necessarily feel I need that to get my point across. So I don't use it. You know, I feel like my music is in a standalone category. I don't need certain things. You know, I need to talk about banging. You know, I don't need to be cursing. It's not necessarily what I have to do to get my point across. Other people use different things in different music, and hey, whatever floats your boat, man, whatever you think you need to do it with. But for me, when it comes to John D. Green Sr. music, I don't need that. You know, I don't need that to get my point across. And, of course, part of that is being a role model. Do you want your children to sit around and what do you want them to hear? Do you want them to hear the truth in the music, or do you want them to hear the excessive amount of vulgarity you use in your music? What do you want to stand out to them? So, yeah, I kind of follow a certain principle when it comes to my music. You know, I have a way in which I like to do things, and a certain sound, I'm trying to achieve a certain thing, and part of that is just, it's not even a straight edge or a clean angle, it's just being true to me. I don't feel I need it, so I don't use it. And, you know, I try to things that matter. So, yeah, I think, you know, we're all role models in a sense, and we should understand and embrace that very much.
Definitely.
So we have, you know, a lot to live up to, you know. And if you can inspire someone, why not inspire them positively? Why not?
Right.
You know, if you can, then do. So, yeah.
Definitely. Well, you know, John, I have thoroughly enjoyed, you know, going down this journey with you in the past year. I have really appreciated you being on the show tonight, and I did not know what direction we were going to go.
Right.
But I'm pleased with the direction it went. I hope that you are. Is there anything else that you want to share or express before I close out the show?
Well, just thank you all for listening. Especially you, Ruby. You still there? I see you there. Thanks, Ruby. Yeah,
definitely.
This is awesome. Thank you very much, Slay. Very much.
Well, you know you've got a home here, so anytime that you've got something that you know you want to share, or you got a new project, you know, or you're ready to shout out that we can see you on the big screen or whatever, definitely, you know, let me know, and we can do this as many times as you want to do this. So, again, I want to thank everybody who tuned in to listen to the show live, to those that hung out in the chat room, to the many, many that were hanging out on the phone tonight, and to those that actually come back and check out the archives. This is definitely a feature that is worth, you know, you setting aside the 2 hours to take a listen to. I'm going to close out tonight's show, John, with your piece that's called If I Told You.
Sweet. Thank you.
Thank you, darling. listening to On the Leopard Carpet with Lady Flava, where my special guest tonight was singer-songwriter, musician, composer, and actor John D. Green Sr. out of Michigan. You can find out more about John D. Green Sr. at www.johndgreensenior.com. You can actually also find out more about John D. Green Sr. on flavanews.com if you go to the cooperative section. John has a page on my website. Take care, God bless, and help spread the word about what we are doing here at Flava News Radio in support of independent artists of all art forms and all genres. Good night.